to Sleepy, Connecticut, where Bruce Shapiro is standing by to say a few words about the travails of President Trump. The people of New Jersey, Virginia, and New York have spoken loudly. Bruce, welcome back to the show.
Always good to be here.
Bruce, what does this mean?
It's been an extraordinary night for off-year elections. You know, usually off-year elections between a presidential election and midterms are about sleepy municipal races, mayoralities, and things like that. We've had a remarkable Democratic sweep in the last 24 hours. You know, we will talk, I'm sure, at length about Zohan Mamdani in New York City, the
Indeed.
Big headline of the night. But in some ways, the bigger news nationally is off-year elections in Virginia, where Democrats took back the governorship, swept out of office an attorney general, won down ballot races, knocking out Republicans in the state legislature. In New Jersey, where Representative Mikey Sherrill, a kind of liberal technocrat, more in the Hillary Clinton mode than the Mamdani or AOC mode, won the governorship. In Pennsylvania, where a series of judges targeted by Republicans held onto their seats, Democratic judges targeted by Republicans held onto their seats, all over the country, and then even in California, where redistricting to hold on to and grow the number of Democratic congressional districts, a move sparked by Governor Gavin Newsom in opposition to the Texas legislature's attempt to gerrymander Republican increases in Congress. All of these were Democratic sweeps across the board. You can even go to red states, to Georgia, where in down ballot races for things like county commissioner, Democrats prevailed in areas where they haven't in years. You don't want to read too much into these things, but it was very clear that across the board, the level of motivation, the level of pushback against the policies of the Trump administration, the roundups of immigrants, the cutting off of food aid lurking in the background of this is the government shutdown in which food stamps, which go to an eighth of Americans, are not going to be provided this month. You know, all of this swirling around has led to an unusual off-year Democratic wave, which you got to think has Republicans in Congress who thus far have followed Donald Trump anywhere he will go, some of them are going to be thinking, if they're in vulnerable districts, what do I do now?
What about me? They might be starting to think. But, Bruce, I know we must always be cautious, and caution is the byword of Late Night Live. We never make extravagant predictions. It's just not in our nature. But this is interesting, is it not? Because opinion polls don't necessarily suggest that Trump is in much trouble. In fact, for many people looking at the United States of America, one of the most troubling things is that Trump is doing all this muck, but the people still seem to be, you know, more or less going along with it. But when they come to the ballot box, it's very different.
Yes. Well, and the question always is what's going to happen at the ballot box. The numbers on President Trump are conflicted. His personal approval ratings, the ratings, the percentages of people blaming him for the shutdown, disapproving of the immigrant policy, all of those have him kind of in the tank. He's in trouble with those. What haven't moved too much so far are the percentages of people in polls who talk about how they would vote. But that's very abstract. What we're seeing this year, anyway, is a really highly motivated Democratic electorate. In a number of these districts, and we're still looking at the numbers, right? But in a number of these districts in Virginia, New Jersey, elsewhere, Democratic candidates this year ran way ahead of Kamala Harris's numbers in the presidential election. In a number of cases, Democratic and voter participation generally is way up. In New York City, for instance, we saw the largest voter turnout in any municipal election since 1969. Now, I was 10 years old in 1969. That was a long time ago. That was also the first time the New York Mets, whose colors are Zohan Mamdani's campaign colors, parenthesis, won the World Series. Okay.
Thanks, Bruce. That's a really useful way of us telling how time has passed. Yes, please keep going on.
But you do have to go back a long time in New York City history and in the history of Virginia and in the history of New Jersey to see an elector motivated in an off-year election as powerfully as this year. What secured Donald Trump's victory last year wasn't just his own gains, though there were some of those. A lot of it was Democratic voter fall-off, a fall-off in participation by people disillusioned by politics or people who simply felt profoundly dissatisfied or just plain unmotivated by either of the presidential campaigns.
And isn't there polling that shows, or some investigations that shows, if those Democrats who didn't bother to turn out to vote had actually gone to vote, the result for Trump would have been even more resounding?
This is one of these speculative exercises, and a lot of it depends on which part of the country you're talking about. But at a minimum, the margins for Trump in a number of swing states would have been much smaller if people had turned out to vote for Democrats.
Right? Yeah.
Previous Democratic voters. I mean, look, even in... I'm talking to you from New Haven, Connecticut, a profoundly Democratic city. And in this city last year, 5,000 fewer people voted than had voted in the presidential election of 4 years earlier, right? If that trend changes, if what we saw on election day 2025 prevails going into the midterms and going into the next presidential cycle, it's going to be a very different story. That doesn't mean that the ills of American politics are solved, but it does suggest we are seeing some possibility of new degrees of motivation, new ways of organizing. Something has changed to move more people to the polls than we would typically see.
Well, some things have definitely changed in New York. Tell us about Mamdani.
What I found most interesting about Mamdani's quite substantial victory by over 10 points over Andrew Cuomo was Mamdani's uncompromising articulation of his own principles when he came out to give his victory speech. He began his victory speech by quoting Eugene V. Debs, the patron saint of American democratic socialism, a railroad workers union leader and socialist party leader who ran for president on an anti-war ticket from jail in 1918. Okay. He cited Jesse Jackson, FDR. He did not at all apologize for running against Cuomo. In fact, he talked about defeating a political dynasty. And he really went out of his way to speak as an immigrant himself at a time when immigrant communities in an immigrant city are under attack. He also overwhelmingly captured a youth vote, a huge percentage of his high voter turnout were young voters. And he spoke specifically about the economic choices that young voters have been making. He's been laser focused on affordability as a key campaign issue. And that came up again and again and again.
Yes.
In his speech, right? It was a very unusual campaign in his own gifted practice of retail politics and in a grassroots volunteer effort that got something like 80,000 door knockers and other campaign volunteers motivated. Again, outside the usual Democratic Party apparatus, you saw some major Democratic figures like Senator Chuck Schumer sit on their hands and not come out for him, right?
God, he must feel like a winner tonight. Good on you, Chuck. Well done.
Chuck is in an interesting position. Senator Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, on the one hand has infuriated probably large numbers of his own electorate in New York City. On the other hand, he would say, I think, that he's responsible for fundraising for Democrats all over the country, and there are many Democratic donors who are still really worried about having someone who's a Democratic socialist and who champions Palestinian rights as the mayor of New York City.
But isn't that the thing? I mean, I watched that victory speech as well. I was puzzled by the huge roar Mamdani got for saying that we have toppled a political dynasty. The sense of rage at Cuomo seemed to be very powerful in the audience.
It was powerful in the audience, and it was unusual in an American politician in a victory speech to hear no quarter asked nor given to his defeated opponent.
Yes.
He said, I wish him well in private life, and this is going to be the last time I'm going to speak his name.
Right? That was extraordinarily brutal.
And I think that speaks to the bitterness of the campaign between these two men, in which Cuomo, the former governor, forced out of office on sexual harassment charges, repeatedly mispronounced deliberately Mamdani's name and accused him of being anti-Semitic and played all kinds of bigotry cards. And it was quite interesting to see Mamdani essentially saying, we're turning the page on this, but I'm not making peace with it.
But there you have Chuck Schumer sitting on his hands because he's got to raise the money. And it appeared from that victory speech and from the campaign itself, I don't know whether you would agree with this, that what Mamdani is saying is we are up against money. And we have power at the ballot box, but our enemy here are the elites who are pushing up rents, the elites who are making life in this town too expensive. The enemy there is money, and this is going to be very hard for the Democratic Party, isn't it?
Well, it's hard in American politics generally, right? You have to remember that the U.S. Supreme Court, now 20 years ago, declared that money is speech.
That was a good move, wasn't it?
And to a great extent, campaign spending is virtually unlimited. Mamdani himself has raised a lot of money. AOC, Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez, is the biggest fundraiser in the U.S. Congress.
So is she?
Socialists,
how
yes, she is. So socialists, the biggest Democratic fundraiser, I should say. Socialists in American politics know something about raising money themselves, but it is absolutely true that in this victory speech, as in his campaign, Mamdani articulated a kind of pure Bernie Sanders, anti-elite, anti-oligarch version of democratic socialism. Now, it should be said that this democratic socialism is an American strain. It's essentially European social democracy, right? We're not talking about Joseph Stalin here, right?
we're not going to strip the rich of their fortunes. We might try to get them to pay some tax.
Yeah, it's really about harnessing the labor movement and the energies that sparked the New Deal and the Great Society, continuing the American tradition of redistributionism, right? But it's also been very much a tradition among more conservative American politicians to demonize that and to try to sort of tar it with the anti-communist, anti-socialist brush. And you've certainly heard lots of that. You heard it from Cuomo, from Republican Curtis Sliwa, who got 7% of the vote that otherwise might have gone to Cuomo.
Who came out to Australia to do some quite good work 30 years ago. He tried to set up a vigilante operation in Sydney. It failed, of course, and so he went back to America. He was wearing a red beret even then.
He wore it tonight.
God bless him. He must be bald. Is he incredibly bald under that beret? But Bruce, seriously for a moment, are these string of defeats across America for Trump going to change him in any way? Will he look at these and think, well, maybe I should restore Obamacare. Maybe I should,
They're not going to change Donald Trump. He has one mode of politics, right? And his one mode of politics is disruption and authoritarianism. The question is, will it split his supporters in Congress? Will it change the Republican Party? Will it change any Republican office holders, particularly those in suburban and swing districts, who can read an election like this and know the distress of their constituents, even though they themselves have been unafraid, they've been too frightened, too intimidated to break with the president?
They've gone along with everything.
We are now in the middle of a government shutdown. Right, a government shutdown in which, as I said, 1 out of 8 Americans have lost their food stamps. In my own city in New Haven, that's 1 in 5 residents get food assistance from the federal government. In which flights, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, flights are now getting delayed. The pain of the government shutdown is beginning to ripple out. And if you look at polls, people are, for the most part, blaming President Trump and blaming Republicans. What happens tomorrow when Republicans sit down and have conversations with themselves quietly? Do they begin to walk away a bit from the president, or do we just keep doubling down on the ICE raids and the arrests and the dragging of people across the floor of jails? Do we double down on taking away food stamps and on not paying furloughed federal workers, who, by the way, were a substantial part of the federal workers are a substantial part of that Virginia electorate that took the governorship away from the Republican Party?
All to be discussed, Bruce, when we next have you back on Late Night Live.
Thank you. To be continued.
Thank you for joining us in these dramatic circumstances. I have, of course, been speaking to Bruce Shapiro, contributing editor at The Nation and executive director of the Global Center for Journalism and Trauma. Bruce, thanks.
As always.